Welcome to Oppenheimer's latest edition of Let's Talk Future. This edition is going to go through our recent report, The Golden Age of Space. And we have two guests that are going to talk about new space industries. They are both pioneers and leaders in growing this industry. And they are both building two new constellations that are focused on Earth observability. Brian O'Toole is the CEO from BlackSky. And Dr. Graham Shaw from Antarctica is a lead investor in Earth Daily. As I'm sure many of you have read our report, we have space industries growing in the next decade. One of the largest new growth areas is clearly going to be the communications industry. We think it could ultimately capture 10 to 20% of a $2 trillion market. And there's going to be a huge military buildouts and many, many other new industries that we touched on in the report. Now, this growth and this innovation is going to be needed to meet the long-term goals of colonizing both the moon and Mars by SpaceX, Blue Origin, and many others, and many Chinese companies. And the innovation is really being driven by these two large companies to a large degree, but there are also dozens of new startups like we're about to discuss. We do think this is going to be a huge year for space. We probably will have some major IPOs, SpaceX being one. Starship will probably be commercialized. The reusable rocket is going to be able to carry payloads 10 times larger and much better communication satellites. We have AST turning up direct-to-device communication services. We're going to see a lot more military deployments. And for our discussions, the new Earth observation constellations are going to be game changers. When you combine the data that they can collect with AI, we're now going to be able to do much, much better forecasts on what's actually going on down here in Earth. Brian O'Toole, I'll start out with you, Brian. Brian has over 30 years experience in the observability industry and in satellite. He is the CEO of BlackSky. And with that, I'll have you talk about your background in the company a bit more, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Great to be here. Really, it's an honor and it's an exciting time in the industry. My history goes back. I've been in the industry about 30 years. I'm an aerospace engineer and software engineer by training. I got into the Earth observation industry almost 20 years ago as the CTO of one of the early pioneers in the sector, GeoEye, which later went on and merged and is now Vantorc. I left there and I started a new company, which was looking at the future of space, enabled by real-time software and scalable AI platforms to transition space data into actionable intelligence. Merged that company with BlackSky now over 10 years ago and have been running BlackSky since about that time. And we went public in 2022 and are now at the point where we have a first-of-its-kind platform on orbit delivering dynamic hourly monitoring from space using a constellation of small Earth observation satellites and an AI-enabled platform. So really exciting track record and an exciting time to be part of the industry at this point.
Thanks, Ryan. So we'll turn it over to you, Dr. Graham. Can you describe a bit more your background and Earth Daily?
Sure. I got my PhD in the sector looking at constellations and for both communications and observation back in the 90s. And then for a while, I was building spacecraft, and then I was selling spacecraft for Orbital Sciences and then Northrop Grumman. And then for about 15, 20 years now, I've been consulting. I joined Antarctica Capital around 2020 to help manage an investment they made in a company called Earth Daily, which is a constellation, or will be a constellation of Earth observation spacecraft. It's more of a change detection system where we will cover the whole Earth every day, everywhere on Earth, as opposed to Brian that can, you know, constantly observe a given area. So it's more of a wide area. And it's the other thing is that it's optimized to get a lot of measurements in many, many colors, many different spectral bands in order to classify change. So this is especially important for agriculture or minerals or things like that. Through my consulting, I still consult a lot for a lot of the hedge funds. Also represent lenders' interests in whether it's export credit or other investors in a bunch of projects.
So both of you are launching new constellations. Brian, the Gen 3 satellites, you have three of them up in air. They are performing incredibly well. Can you talk about what this means for your company and your customers?
Sure. Last year, we launched our Gen 3 satellites. These satellites are delivering exceptional performance. They're a best-in-class vehicle. It's in the small satellite category, but they're delivering 35-centimeter imaging at about a satellite price point of about a fifth of the legacy type vehicles, delivering that level of performance. So we were able to get several of those satellites up last year. They work pretty much out of the gate and are exceeding expectations. We have customers around the world that are already adopting and integrating those services into their operations. And what's really exciting is as we expand the constellation, in addition to the very high resolution, we're adding very high frequency. So now we're adding the ability to see things the same place on Earth multiple times a day to detect changes and establish patterns and trends that are going to deliver new insights to our customers. And as you mentioned, we developed one of the industry's leading AI capabilities that are allowing us to analyze those images, not only from our satellites, but from other providers, pretty much in real time. As we're collecting, we're processing and analyzing and detecting patterns and delivering the imagery and those analytic insights right into the hands of the customers on demand. This is a capability that hasn't ever existed in the industry before.
AI has also been a game changer for your service. You can deliver the images, obviously, much higher quality, but much faster. And more important, you can actually analyzing the images and basically describe to your customers what they mean and also now provide predictions on what these images are predicting. Can you go through that a bit more?
Yeah, the traditional market, which if you see satellite imagery on Google Maps and things like that, it's weeks and months old. And because there was a few satellites, it took days and weeks to get updated information. And now we've moved that into the dynamic real-time world where real-time intelligence is really paramount across these industries. We put these satellites in orbit such that we have, and this exists today with our Gen 2 constellation, now adding Gen 3, where we have essentially a satellite flying over, if you're listening, anybody listening here, over your building once an hour. And with the ability to log into the platform, task a collection, and get that imagery and analytics back in just a few minutes. And so that's changing the compelling economics in space, but a completely new experience on the ground anchored by a very powerful global software and AI platform.
And can you discuss some of the new use cases all this is enabling?
Well, I think for sure the defense applications and intelligence applications are expanding. When you combine the 35-centimeter capability with high-frequency monitoring, you can start to get into activity-based intelligence, looking at activities over time that are emergent, such as border crossings and other humanitarian-related things, as well as looking at things like forest protection and other things. There's a large and growing demand for maritime monitoring and capability, both for logistics and global supply chain intelligence, as well as natural resources and obviously national security applications. So when you start to combine this capability with others, such as what Graham is developing, you start to develop very powerful capabilities by bringing these things together. And I see the use cases expanding, Tim, particularly as autonomous systems and other things need real-time updates to improve their performance using AI to deliver that capability. So we are in the early days of really how this can be leveraged into large numbers of new use cases across both national security, government, and major industrial type applications.
And Graham, how about for Earth Daily? What are the new use cases and applications you're expecting to see?
Yeah, to be clear, Daily, as it stands today, doesn't have radar and LiDAR, but it does have a lot of different colors, a lot of different spectral bands in order to take measurements of the Earth as opposed to just images. So we can measure soil moisture. We can measure the oil in the amount of oil in a forest reserve in order to predict the fuel in a forest for that might be a risk of forest fires, we can very accurately identify crop stress and crop disease because you have many different kind of colors you're sensing. But I think that the big difference or the big complementary aspect with what Brian was discussing, as I said, is that we tend to cover a very large area, right? Our swath width, we see 240 kilometers all the time, and we're just sucking it up and collecting the whole earth all the time, every day. And so we build up an archive of kind of a record of what the world looked like yesterday and what it looked like the day before and what it looked like the day before that. And so nothing kind of escapes view. What that allows you to do is be able to see change when you didn't expect it, right?
And how important is AI to your service capabilities?
I think AI, as Brian said, is a game changer for the industry in general, because most businesses, they don't really want images. An image is nice to look at, but it doesn't really tell you anything. You can't act on it. It's not actionable intelligence. What you care about is what is in the image, or what the image means, or what the measurement means. If I give you a soil moisture measurement, what are you going to do with it? Not much. But if I can tell you that the soil moisture is a certain thing, and that you know the weather, and you know what you planted, or you know what the temperature is going to be, that is something much more useful. And you can integrate that with an AI and give an answer to someone and say, oh, there's a fire risk. You better send someone out to clear the brush around the house, because that house is looking like it's facing severe fire risk. So the AI is important to turn data into insights, and that will massively broaden the TAM, because there just aren't enough experts in the field today in dispersed across the commercial world. The government has experts, but generally the commercial world do not have the experts to know what all this means. You have to tell them. And it is impossible to scale a company to have all of those experts in all of the different sectors and still be profitable. So you need AI to help you. So that's where it comes in.
Brian, what does AI mean for your company, your customers, and the industry?
I think the geospatial analytics industry historically has been massively fragmented, because you require experts across hundreds of different use cases across multiple industries. And so it's highly manual, and it's lacked timely information that would feed decision-making systems and decision-makers across all of those industries. The space-based capability tied with communications with expert-type AI that's delivering insights is the connection, the last-mile connection that's been missing that can defragment the market. We've been investing in AI now for 10 years. This isn't a new thing for us, and it's not just about AI. It's, as Graham pointed out, it's about delivering actionable intelligence that's accurate, timely, and relevant. And we have a competitive advantage in that we can collect data hourly in all kinds of environments and different environmental conditions and things like that, that can give us excellent training data to develop very accurate and high-performing models from our constellation. And then when you combine it with other data, you get even more improved performance, which is what the end user needs to rely on. And so we incorporate AI throughout our entire tech stack. I think we're still early days of AI, but we see the practical applications and the impacts that it's going to have across the entire sector. And so we've built a substantial team of machine learning and data scientists and the tools and processes internally to build and deploy these capabilities at scale.
Brian, can you tell us what compute you use to run your in-house build AI models and applications on?
In some cases, we use appliances. In other cases, we have a multi-cloud infrastructure that allows us to leverage different cloud environments, dedicated GPU systems, and things like that. We've already done things like put AI on spacecraft to, when we collect, we can start detecting things right on the board, the satellite. So there will be a combination over time of more on orbit, but I think the majority of it will be on the ground, leveraging the high-performance computing resources that are emerging.
That was a great background on the Earth observability market and how AI is rapidly changing it. As we wrote in our report, we were fairly surprised that there are 6 different ways to do Earth observations from space, and that there are dozens of different new end applications. And frankly, we were also surprised to learn that there's over a dozen new communication constellations being built out, and many more happening right now. Starlink is clearly the 300-pound gorilla with $15 billion in annual revenues. They've become a game changer for delivering broadband to remote locations. So, Graham, I know you're consulting to many of these communication satellites and many other new industries. Where are we in the process of developing space communications?
Well, I think, look, in the beginning of my career, satellite communications have always been a good business. I was in it, and I understand what you're saying is there was a lot of subscribers to broadcast TV. Anyone who's watching who had DirecTV or EchoStar or in the Europe Sky or Canal Plus was getting their TV over satellites. And then I think what's happened is with the really the explosion in demand for broadband and the internet and the growth of Netflix and things like that, the broadcast business kind of fell away because people want online or on demand, and satellites weren't great for that as they were architected. So, you know, about 10 years ago or a little bit longer, we started pivoting over to broadband type applications, maybe 15 years ago. And, you know, where we are now is, you know, with these big, huge networks, there's LEO networks like Starlink and soon to come Amazon LEO and OneWeb in Europe and you know, the Telesat Lightspeed and a few others. Where we are now is that satellite networks are a part of a global communication ecosystem. It's really hard to define the boundaries of that because they feed mobile networks, they feed enterprise networks, they feed machine-to-machine networks through IoT and other things. So they're a part of a larger ecosystem. The you mentioned AST, you know, the direct-to-device guys like Link and AST. You know, those don't exist on their own. No one's going to subscribe to AST on its own and say, this is my AST phone, right? It's part of a network. It fills in a gap that your mobile operator has a gap and AST will fill in that gap. So in that, it means that the space industry not only grows with, like, the rising tide raises all boats, it rises with the growth of the communications business. But, you know, you can see how satellites can implement or integrate with whole other business areas and ecosystems. And that's going to really drive kind of returns for the shareholder, I think.
And Brian, can you expand on that some more?
Yeah, I think a couple things maybe to build on Graham's point. I think a lot of us are quite, I don't want to say surprised, but those of us who have been doing this a long time, the amount of progress made in the last 8 years across the entire sector from launch to infrastructure components, payloads, basically satellite technologies, and then these communication networks is just incredible. Throw in the middle of that the advancements in AI and autonomous systems, and you're seeing the convergence of a massive change in the way that we use space here on Earth for all kinds of industries. I think, Tim, I've always felt that our strategy, which was to innovate in space combined with a world-class scalable software platform, was the right way to innovate, and doing that in vertically integrated business. So, you know, we're able to quickly iterate in space. We put Gen 3 up just within a couple of years after getting our Gen 2 constellation up as a world-class platform. We're working on our next generation digital mapping satellite along with that. And there's some other more advanced things that we're working on, and we're looking to incorporate optical inter-satellite links and other optionality and communications packages on orbit. On this platform side, I believe we had the right vision over 10 years ago of a multi-int real-time AI-driven platform, and we're continuing to innovate by bringing in other data and accelerate the type of service and the level of insights and analytics that we can deliver to our customers and address a growing TAM as these types of space intelligence capabilities get adopted and integrated into these other industrial type use cases. So I think we've hit the right formula, both in space and on the ground. It's an interesting way to build a company in the sense that you have to have these forward-looking aerospace and satellite engineers. And then I need to move at the speed of software and the speed of AI on the ground to leverage that capability. And so I think we've struck an excellent balance on innovating on both of those sides. And now we're seeing it converge very rapidly as comms come in, AI comes in, and all the other use cases are going to be enabled by what's happening across the entire sector.
Graham, in our report, we did get into some new industries like manufacturing, mining, tourism, data centers, settlements, cargo transport, and I'm sure there'll be many others. What do you think will be the next big new space industry?
That's a very difficult question. If I knew the answer, I'd probably be making money on it. The applications that are the use cases that are possible with when you bring enough information and enough data together and enough compute power with responsive and wide-reaching data, I think that there is a niche to put more compute on orbit, whether it's, you know, data centers themselves or compute nodes to do in-situ processing to reduce the amount of data you have to bring down. I think that's probably a good business case. I'm not sure it makes sense sending data up to process it in orbit, but that I think is interesting. I think that there is an opportunity for multi-modal type sensing to give more and more information about what is going on the Earth, better weather forecasts and things like that. But I think the tourism and the other kind of business cases that we see, they might emerge, but you know, that they're a little bit, the subject's a little bit different dynamics, different economics and different dynamics. I think there's plenty of runway ahead of us. We're only scratching the surface in the Earth observation market, and I think we're only kind of we're on the growth curve on communications and navigation. So I would think that those are going to continue to drive the business or drive the overall investments, and there's plenty of opportunities there. I know that there's some really interesting business cases out there involving radar.
And Brian, what do you think will be the next new space industry?
I'm like Graham. Here's how I think about it, Tim. We're entering into spaces, to me, I equate it to the early days of the internet, where all the money is going into the infrastructure to make it happen. And no one really imagined the Ubers of the world at the start of this thing, right? And so when you look at the convergence of multimodal remote sensing in space, ubiquitous comms networks, and AI compute on the ground, and then you unleash that on a developer community, you know, there's going to be things that are going to come out of that none of us, I think, have even dared to think about. And I don't think that's too far off. I think Graham would probably agree. If you had asked us that probably 10 years ago, we probably would have a different opinion. But I'm seeing a very clear path to a world that looks like that.
And to wrap up here, guys, those are all great points. I think we're all going to be very impressed by the new capabilities we're going to see in communications, observation, and military, and all the innovation. I really like the concept of creating essentially APIs to tie into this infrastructure for the first time, using AI to create innovative new applications and predictions. We'll have a great few years ahead of us, guys. Thanks for your time.
All right, thanks, Tim.
Thanks a lot.